That's right. I tell you what, you're in for a good show this afternoon. I have Congressman James E. Clyburn in the building with us. He was just down at Piedmont Tech doing a book signing and a talk about his book, Blessed Experiences, Genuinely Southern, Proudly Black. And we are so blessed to have him in studio with us here today. How are you doing, Congressman Clyburn?
I'm doing very well, and I consider it a blessing to be here.
Well, thank you very much. Thank it's you. Great to have you.
Thank you.
So how was your talk out there at Piedmont Tech?
Well, I just shared with them the background on the book, what made me write it, and how it got the title that it has. And I did a little Q&A on exactly what people can expect to find when they read it. And there were a few people there who had already read the book.
Well,
and
that must have been nice.
Yeah, that made for a very good discussion. And one elderly gentleman in the back said to me that he read quite a few political books. Mm-hmm. And he just considered them just to be, I think he said, blah.
Blah?
He said, but not this one.
It's a good book. You and I had quite a conversation of it when you were here before.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm pretty proud of the book.
Well, you should be. Now, how's the book doing out there?
It's going very well. We just had the fourth printing delivered last week.
Wow.
In December.
10,000
new books came in last week because we are out of books.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. And we are going to go to paperback in December. Three colleges have already adopted the book
for
second semester.
Wow.
And we plan to release, hopefully in November, the audio of the book. And I did the audio myself.
Well, that's going to be a very interesting read then, if you did it yourself. That's going to be an interesting read.
Well, thank you.
Now, you were telling me off the air that you actually have to take all this in front of ethics?
Yes, yes.
Why?
Before the book was ever released, we submitted the contract we had for the book to ethics so that though the University of South Carolina Press mm-hmm. Is the publisher, and they're in my district.
Right.
Because, you know, the history of books written by congresspeople is a sordid one.
A sordid tale.
Absolutely. And so they just want to make sure that everything's on the up and up. And so I believe in transparency. I'm not making anything off this book. Every penny from this book goes to the foundation that I established before I went to Congress.
Before and you I want all your Congress.
Yes, I've been in Congress 22 years.
I know.
But this foundation of mine has been working to send young people to colleges and universities all over this country before I ever went to Congress. In fact, next year, we are going to have our 25th golf tournament, 25th annual.
Wow.
And I'm one of those people who will do it right. So when I say the 25th annual, that means it's been 26 years, because the first time you do it, it's an inaugural.
Right.
You cannot have the first annual until you've done it for a year. And so when I say I'm doing the 25th annual, it means I've been doing it for 26 years, the inaugural, and then 25. So that means I was doing this for 4 years before I ever went to Congress. Now, it's even a little more than that, because it's the 25th year that it's been the Canzetta Classic. Before the Canzetta Classic, it was the PIC Classic. Pamela Issa's Conference is a little think tank that I put together when I was running around trying to get young people involved in politics. And so we started doing this tournament when it was called the PIC Classic. So I'm just giving this history because I want you readers to know the writing of this book and sending the money to this foundation is something that's been going on for a long, long time. And so they will also know, last August, mm-hmm. we gave out $410,000 in scholarship aid to 100 students going to colleges and universities all over this country.
And all over the country?
Yes.
It's not South Carolina alone?
No.
Wow.
What we do, the eligibility to get one of these scholarships, every student gets from $1,000 to $4,000 in cash. Every student gets a laptop, and everyone gets a software package. And to be eligible, mm-hmm. there are two criteria. Number one, you can, if you live in the district, mm-hmm. you're eligible no matter what school you go to.
Okay.
If you go to school in the district, you're eligible no matter where you're from.
In your district.
In the 6th district.
Right, okay.
Right. So if you live
from Missouri and
Missouri and you apply to the University of South Carolina, which is in my district, Columbia College, the Citadel, South Carolina State, Claflin, Voorhees, Allen, Benedict, Morris.
That is truly awesome.
Yes.
Truly awesome. You have any idea how many students you maybe have graduated through this 26 years?
Well, we don't track them for graduation, but we know we've given out over 2,000 scholarships.
2,000 scholarships.
Yes.
In 25, 26 years?
Yes.
Wow.
Right.
It's picking up speed then, I
well,
guess.
Well, a lot of people, there was a time when we did 10.
Right. That's what I was thinking. It's picking up speed if you gave
absolutely.
Out 400. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, you mess around and, this 100, mm-hmm. we've been doing 100 now for almost 10 years. Because when I became a leader mm-hmm. in the Congress, the tournament attracted more folks.
More attention.
Yes.
Yes.
I remember when we had 22 people participate in the tournament. Last year, we had 470.
Now, where's the tournament held?
It's held at Santee, South Carolina.
Okay.
We do it. Last year, we did it on 4 golf courses. And
a lot of politicals, I guess, are there, huh?
A lot of politicals are there. A lot of non-politicals are there. A lot of business people. Parks, Recreation, and Tourism mm-hmm. Gave us the Charles Bundy Award 3 or 4 years ago as the entity that's had the greatest impact on rural economic development in the state of South Carolina. So we got that award from Parks, Recreation, and Tourism. And PRT is nothing partisan about it because PRT has been running by Republicans for a long time.
Wow.
And I'm not one of them.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. That is truly awesome. I had no idea about that. I'm glad that you were able to share that with us here today.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Now, you got another award this year that I did know about.
Okay.
You got the Johnny L. Cochran Jr. Soaring Eagle Award from the American Association for Justice.
Right.
Now, I understand this is usually for lawyers.
Yes, they usually give that to an outstanding trial lawyer every year, usually from their membership. And when I got the letter saying that I had been selected for this award, I told my chief of staff, who is a lawyer, I said, you better call these people. I think somebody a little bit confused, let them know I'm not a lawyer.
Right.
So he did call them, and they told him that they had not made an error. They were making an exception. And so I'm very proud of that award.
Now, when you got that award, you said you've worked your entire professional career to exceed expectations and achieve some degree of success. Your life has been full of some significant experiences, not all pleasant, but all which you consider blessings.
Yes. Well, I mean that. That's what my book is all about, blessed experiences. And I said in the introduction of the book that all my experiences have not been pleasant. But I consider all them to be blessings. Now, you got to look back sometimes.
At the time, it's not always a blessing, is
That's
it?
That's exactly right, to see those blessings. But I do believe that. And the reason I talk about it to exceed expectations, because people don't like to talk about this, but the fact of the matter is I've had some pretty established and intelligent political figures say things and not really understand what they're saying. The expectation for someone with my skin color, or less than they are for people with your skin color. That's a fact, not just in South Carolina, that's in the country. And I think that's why a lot of people are so upset about Barack Obama, and I've said that, because no one ever expected to live to see an African-American elected president of the United States of America, and some people still got a hard time getting used to that. Now, I know a lot of your listeners are going to say, I'm injecting race in this. I'm not injecting race in this.
Okay.
Race was injected in this country from its very beginning, since 1619. And if we be honest about this, we'll always have to say that part of what this country, I think W.E.B. Du Bois, at the turn of the century, turn of the last century, wrote that this would be America's quagmire. And it is. And I think it's just ridiculous for people to pretend that nothing about this is racial. We know it better than that.
Okay. Can we talk about other things now?
Anything you want to talk about.
All right, there you go. All right. You know, I was, I told you I was very impressed about that. But, you know, some of the other things that are out there, one of the things that I'm really, really concerned about is the mental health of our country.
Sure.
And, you know, I actually went to the effort to print out even where the Affordable Care Act falls on mental health. But, you know, we have so many issues that are happening and continue. Just that episode that happened out there in the West Coast. I mean, and they say that that was related to his hurt of his girlfriend breaking up with him back in August. And here we are almost at November. We're not dealing with mental health. And the people do not have a place to go. You know, we used to have Bull Street. We used to have Milledgeville. We used to have places, albeit maybe not the best, but at least they had a roof over their head. What do we do about mental health today?
Well, I'm smiling.
Yeah,
here.
You are smiling. I think I don't know what she's gonna. He's always gonna hit me now. Bam, man. Amarola Ghazi's right here in the building.
I'm tempted, but I'm not going to go there. I'm gonna ask your listeners though to go back and check and see what administration decided to get rid of these mental health institutions.
Okay.
And all I'm gonna say.
Was it Republican? I'll go ahead
yes,
and bite.
Yes, it was.
I'll bite.
Yes, it was.
Okay. What
go
administration
back and check.
Was it?
Ronald Reagan. Yeah.
Well, I thought it did it or did it not have to do with the fact that their part of it was that their civil rights were being trampled, that they were being held. Is that true
may be
or true. Not true?
Oh, that may be true, but I mean, look, you can fix all that.
Okay.
You know, I absolutely believe it was a horrible mistake.
I agree. It was a horrible mistake.
For us to do what we did. I said so back then when nobody was listening to anything I would say, and not many
well,
people
listen
now.
Thank God they listen to you now
oh,
a little
I
bit.
Think, I don't think many people listen to me now. But I think that was a horrible mistake. I really believe that mental health is a big, big issue in this country.
And we're not it dealing
is,
with it.
It is getting worse.
Yes.
We're going to have men and women coming back from Afghanistan, from Iraq.
Yes.
We are, since Vietnam.
Yes, I agree.
We knew since Vietnam that this is a new era around the world for fighting wars.
Right.
We aren't going to have any traditional wars like we've had before. And I was on the Veterans Affairs Committee when I first got to Congress. You may remember, I think I shared with you, that I patterned, when I went to Congress, I patterned my service in Congress after William Jennings Bryan Dorn. He was one of my heroes politically.
Right.
And I got on his same committees. I was on the Public Works Committee and the Veterans Affairs Committee. Those were the committees that I served on. And I went there because I was patterning my service after him. And when I was on that committee, it's when we first got an inkling. We did an investigation of the VA hospital in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and we saw back then all of the stuff that's now making headlines at these VA hospitals, we saw that they were not doing what they were supposed to do. We saw that they were refusing to recognize Agent Orange as a problem for our Vietnam veterans. And so we've had more Vietnam veterans on the streets,
yes,
homeless.
Yes.
I mean, that is absolutely sinful.
Yes, it is.
So it didn't just start with Iraq and Afghanistan. It is now going to be multiplied many times over. And mental health is a big, big issue.
So what can we do about it? Because in truth, reading the Affordable Care Act, it says that it'll be more accessible to more people. You won't be denied coverage based on pre-existing. But what can we do? Because I honestly know we're not dealing with psychiatrists. I mean, we have psychiatrists, but most of them are medicating. All we're doing is medicating.
But remember now, the Affordable Care Act is saying that we're not going to allow you to discriminate against these
people.
Sure.
Oh, I know that. But it doesn't have a big issue, a big part. I mean, it's there, but there's not a lot.
It's up to the states to do so much of it. That was the state hospital.
Yes,
that was not a federal hospital.
Right, yeah.
But what we withdrew from the state hospital was the federal support for it. And then we came out with all this stuff about mainstreaming people. I still think it's a big mistake now to just willy-nilly mainstream students who need special attention.
I agree with you there.
Now, because I don't care what anybody says. I used to teach.
Yep.
And I know full well if I'm in a classroom, and I've got 20 students that I know are bound for post-secondary education somewhere. And I've got a couple students in my class that I know are challenged and will never have post-secondary education.
Sure.
Am I going to take away from those 20 students that I've got to prepare to compete in society and take up the time with the students who I know are not going to do post-secondary work?
Sure.
I think those students should have a good, productive, meaningful life. And it ought to be done in an environment that I think is compassionate, but doesn't take away from anybody else. Now, remember, I'm talking about kids who could be the sister and brother of somebody right in the classroom. And I would ask any parent that might want to call in here now and take issue with this. If you had three children and one of those children is special for whatever reason, are you going to say to the two students, two children that aren't,
right,
that I'm not going to take any time with you, I'm going to share because I've got to devote this time to the special students? No. We sit there and we try to compartmentalize our service relationship with our children. You know, do the same thing in the classroom. And I think that's what's happening to us with these mental health issues. We are not doing right by people who are mentally ill. And for us to submerge their needs into the mainstream of our activity, I think is unfair to them.
It is unfair. It is very unfair. So what's the answer? I mean, what can be done, whether it's on the federal level or on the state level, what can be done?
You know,
he's laughing at me again, folks. You can't see this, but he's laughing at me here.
Because this makes the case for all reform is not good.
Exactly. Well, we've seen this over time.
Absolutely.
This is not a new story here.
That's exactly right.
Yes, exactly.
Sir. We must reform mental health. This is what we're suffering from now is reform.
Okay.
That could very well, it's just retrogression. And I think we need to sit down and take a hard look.
I agree.
At what it is that we must do for these returning veterans.
Mm-hmm. That's one part of it, yes.
Yeah. We must take a hard look at what we must do for people who, for whatever reason, may find themselves mentally ill. I've talked to, within the last two or three days, I've talked to people, one gentleman I sat down with in Florence three or four nights ago, last week. Very prominent gentleman who's a big supporter of mine. Who is a very well-trained professional.
Okay.
And he shared with me that he has a child that's schizophrenic. He had never shared that with me before. I've known him for 25 years, and I never knew that until last week. He's frustrated.
Well, I think most families, whether it's the tight family, the nuclear unit, or whether it's the extended family, have someone that they know, or they know a friend or something that struggles, and we don't do anything about it. We have people on the streets that can't cope. We have them in our soup kitchens that go to our soup kitchens and once a day get something to eat. But they're not getting their medications, but they're also not solving the problem. And I think that's one of the things that bothers me. We don't get to the root of problems. We medicate and send them out into the world.
That's exactly right.
And yet, and you know, that is where a psychiatrist, it's not an overnight fix. Medication is. You may be able to keep them on the straight and narrow. But how many actually want to take those medications? Because they either affect their libido, they don't make them feel good, and so they don't take the medication.
That's exactly right.
So is there a way, futuristically, next year, to get anything moving on this, Congressman Clyburn?
Well, if you got people who are like me elected to Congress, I'm going to run the show.
You don't run the show.
I'm going to run the show. I mean, when I did, we did. We passed the Affordable Care Act, and we made sure that the Affordable Care Act did not discriminate against people with pre-existing conditions.
Sure.
Would not discriminate against people who were born with some mental illness. Would not discriminate against someone who may be born with a physical illness. We did that.
So are you telling me this is all the Republicans' fault?
No.
Okay.
I'm not telling you that because
some
Democrats didn't vote for it.
Okay. but from a state or from a federal level, what is the direction to get something done on this? And does it have to come from the federal government? Or are there any states, I don't know, any states out there that are doing better than what we're doing here in South Carolina? Do you know?
Oh, I'm sure the state's doing better. I've never done a study of this, but I'll be glad to look into it. But I know this. It's an issue that cannot be done state by state. No returning soldier ought to have to sit down and cherry pick a state to go to based upon mental health.
Sure. I agree with
See,
you.
I want to go to this state because I get better mental health treatment if I go to the other state. I think this is a national issue. It ought to be nationalized, and it ought to be in every state because we don't let them cherry pick when we draft them or when we don't draft anymore, but when we accept them in the military.
I agree with you. Hey, I'm here with the one and only James Clyburn, who accepted my invitation to sit down with me this afternoon. Hey, I hope if you have a question, give him a call, 229-7984. We're going to join the news in progress, a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here with Congressman James E. Clyburn. We've been having a nice heated discussions here, and I love it. And it's nice to have you sit down and be able to spend some time face-to-face.
Well, thank you so much for having it. As I said earlier, I provide you with these 30 days of sound bites when I come on the show.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. All right. Well, we talked about mental health on the state and national level. But, you know, and when you're talking about education and everything, I know we've hit on this before. I know that education is a state issue. But one of the issues that I think is so important that we're just missing out on is the civics.
Yeah.
Is there not something that can be done from a grant basis or something that puts civics in the schools that makes it mandatory of some type, whether it's through granting process or whatever?
Well, I don't know if you could make it mandatory. I know that it ought to be every school district. That ought to be a state issue. You ought not be worried about whether or not somebody made us do it.
Right.
That's almost like saying that's the old Southern way. We wait till the feds make us do it.
But still, citizenship, civics.
It's something that ought to be taught. I had an interesting experience Sunday afternoon. I was in Philadelphia, having been in New Jersey for two events. On Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, I did the lay service, or spoke for the lay service, at Mother Bethel, the first AME church.
Wow.
In America. The young lady who introduced me was a classmate from Lincoln High School in Sumter. In her introduction, she spent time on the civic class that the two of us took together when we were in the ninth grade.
Right.
And she remembered how I conducted myself in that civic class. Now, remember, we were in ninth grade. And
she must have had her eye on you.
Well, she was not bad for me to have my eyes on her either. But the point being, we took a lot of classes together.
Mm-hmm.
But she talked about the civic class, because it was in that class that we learned government.
Right.
And she remembers what we learned in that class. Now, we finished college together. Now, she went to a different college, but we ended up teaching together at Sierra Brown High School in Charleston. The point I'm making here is that we've taken that out of the schools.
Right.
And that is where you learn the fundamentals of what government ought to be. And I think that one of the reasons we have such a limited interest in politics and government today is that we do not make it a part of our children's everyday lives. We have decided that what's really important anymore is STEM, science,
right.
Technology,
exactly.
Engineering, and math. Now, that is important, but I think that just as important is citizenship, learning how to interact with each other, learning what government is all about, how you fit into that process. And the problem we've got now is so many very smart people
mm-hmm.
who make a lot of money and who get real technical educations don't know a thing about what makes our government function and why we ought to be participating as citizens. And so I just think that it's a mistake. It's a big mistake.
So I guess my question is, how can we correct the mistake? Or is there a way to correct it in today's world?
Sure.
Okay.
There's a way to correct it. I mean, the same way we ought to correct the mistake we're making by underfunding schools in poor districts. Remember, that lawsuit's been going on for 20 years.
Yeah, okay. Okay, all right.
So, I mean, South Carolina has never made a commitment to educating everybody. This state has never made a commitment to educating everybody. Education was for the elite. I can take it back to the 1860s and 70s when Robert Smalls introduced the resolution to
I
make public
Robert
schools.
I know Robert Smalls now. I know Robert Smalls.
Oh,
yes, yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
It was he who happened to be an African American.
Right.
Who introduced a resolution that education should be open to all. Free public school system. I tell everybody, that is one of South Carolina's legacy. We were the first state in the Union to propose free public schools for everybody.
Okay.
And we've been running away from that for the last 100 years. That's right.
Well, why, when we spend all this money on education, whether it's state money or federal money, are these things not more equal?
Because our state decided that their responsibility is to provide a minimally adequate education, not an adequate education, but a minimally adequate education. That is not the kind of commitment we ought to be making to our children and our grandchildren.
No, it should not be. It should not be. And how do we get civics back in here?
Well,
how do we solve the problem of education for all then?
I think we ought to make all of these a part of the public discourse. And we don't force that to be in the public discourse. Every time you talk about people, it says, what ails you? I want a job. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Sure, everybody needs a job. But I think that what we ought to do is concentrate at least some on building good citizens. How do you be a good citizen? I've taught my children over and over again, and I think it's one of the lessons. They won't listen to everything I've said. But I've told them, I don't care what it is that you do in life, you must find something to do for which you're not paid. Find something to do for which you're not paid. That's the way you build character. That's the way you build citizenship. That's the way you make yourself attracted to people. Everybody expects for you to earn
to support yourself.
Yeah, support yourself. If you go to work someplace, you're supposed to give an honest day's work for a day's pay. But it's what you do above and beyond. What you do at building character, building citizenship, and that's what civics is all about.
Exactly.
That's
my point.
All about.
Okay, so,
so
we're
I'm
back
making
to my
your point.
Point.
I'm supporting my point, but
I don't know how we get there. This is what I don't understand.
You have to elect people to office who understand that. We don't elect all these technical people we elected to office. I see a lot of people who never run for anything, never participated in government, and all they can think about is all this esoteric stuff, and people vote for that stuff. If you got the right sound bite, that's what they vote for. Rather than having real seasoned discussions of issues, we let people get away with saying, well, I'm not going to debate my opponent, or I'm not going to show up to the editorial boards. And when, I go to all of them, a lot of them don't like me. And I don't care.
Okay.
Because I'm going to go to defend, I'll come to your program because I'm going to defend my position.
I know you are.
I believe in it.
I know you do.
Okay. So it seems to me that if you believe in your position, you ought not be afraid to discuss it.
I agree with you. And I think and I think you probably are right on that.
But we reward that kind of behavior. We reward those people at the ballot box. I hear people tell me all the time, I hate all this negative campaigning.
Right.
And you talk to them, they believe in negative campaigning.
There you go. I think you're right. In fact, here we are. We're coming up on the last week of campaigning. In fact, it'll be a week from today when we'll be going to the ballot. And, I told you when you first walked in here that, what did Bette Midler say? Mud will be slung tonight.
That's
and the
exactly
mud
right.
is getting ready, is being slung already.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's going to happen. People, it's become a contact sport.
And it's a shame.
It is.
It is a shame.
It is. And I don't mind the give and take, but it seems to me that the gotcha stuff.
Yeah.
You got to do, I'll always believe that Nick Theodore lost the governorship on one slip of the tongue. I'll always believe that.
Okay.
I just think that we all just say, wait a minute, come on, people. Who had not made a slip of the tongue?
Sure.
And so you're going to make your decision based upon that slip of the tongue rather than having a full-fledged discussion of the issues that ail us.
Well, don't you actually feel we've gotten away from it? Everybody has television. Everybody has social media. They go on the air. They do their little short things. But nobody sits down like you and I are talking here today anymore.
That's the point. They don't do it anymore. And I really believe that people learn much more about who it is they're voting for if we were made to have these kind of discussions and have real discussions rather than you got 30 seconds to answer this and you got 10 seconds to rebut.
Right. I agree with you. And that's why we try to interview as many candidates doing an hour sit down where you actually get to know the person. Because when you know the person, you at least feel that you know where their moral compass is, for lack of a better way to
exactly,
say it.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know. There's no better way to say it than you just said it.
Yeah. Well,
knowing where people's moral compass is, I think, is what's important rather than worried about a lot of this other stuff.
The sound bites.
What sound bites?
Yeah, and taking things out of context
right.
and slamming them up there. Hey, I tell you what, we're going to hear a quick break, then we're going to come back, and we're going to get into some political speak here. I got an announcement for you. I just found out. In fact, Congressman Clyburn told me that Tom Irwin just dropped out and endorsed Vincent Shaheen. So when we come back, take your gloves off, everybody. I'm ready. Hold on to your hats. We'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafé cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafé mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. I am with Congressman James Clyburn. I wanted to talk a little bit as we go towards the top of the hour. You know, you when you came in, you told me this had just happened. Tom Irwin just suspended his campaign for governor, endorses Vincent Shaheen. It says in the article that I'm reading from South Carolina Radio News that Tom Irwin had just taken out a $3.4 million loan just last week. What do you think? What do you think, dear Congressman Clyburn?
Well, I really believe that you reach a point in any political contest where you come to grips with reality. And I think that he reached that point that in spite of his best efforts and his good intentions, that if he really want those issues that he discussed to be a part of the governmental process in South Carolina going forward. And he talked a lot in his campaign about transparency.
Yes, he did.
Then you look for the best route to get there. And I think he came to the realization that it ain't going to be him. And we definitely ain't going to do it with the incumbent. And so I think that's why he decided, well, you know, why waste these votes if people feel the way I do, let's give the votes to the person that's got a chance to implement what I believe should be implemented. So I think that's what he did.
How do you think, what do you think as far as, what do you think the midterm elections are going to bring?
Well, if the elections were held today,
yes.
I think the Democrats would hold the Senate and I think the Republicans would hold the House. Unfortunately, and maybe fortunately, the elections are not going to be held today. And one of the things that I believe we're going to pay dearly for in this country for a long time is a Supreme Court that seems hell-bent on turning the clock back in more ways than one. Citizens United, to me, was one of the worst Supreme Court decisions in the history of this country. I put it on par with the Dred Scott decision. When we made corporations, the Supreme Court, made corporations people, and we followed that up, we followed that up with...
can we have a little quiet back there? Okay, all right.
And we followed that up with us saying that transparency was thrown away. We've had two Supreme Court decisions on funding campaigns, which now allow unlimited corporate money to go into these campaigns, when for 100 years we said that could not be done.
Well, in, you know, that goes to an interesting question, because one of the things is the dollars to run a campaign in today's world. I mean, Tom Irwin, Irwin just took out $3.4 million loan.
Right.
I mean, the dollars are phenomenal that people need in order to run. And what does that do for the common man who would like to run? It makes it impossible.
It makes it impossible. I'm telling you, back to elitism. Only the elite will be allowed to hold office. Only the wealthy will have a voice, because we've just made money speech, which means you got no money, you got no speech.
Well, you know, you have to look at the Eric Cantor race, though,
sure,
where he had what, less than 100,000, 50,000, 60,000, and yet he took the position from Eric Cantor.
Yes.
In the primary.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
That was in the primary.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So primaries are different.
Primaries are different?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but people spend a lot of money in primaries, too.
They spend a lot of money in the primaries, but primaries are driven by ideology.
Okay.
And you can have a lot of money in the primary if you are off base ideologically, as Candor was, with your party, you're going to lose.
Now, what do you think about Eric Cantor? Why did he lose?
Arrogance. And he was the epitome of it.
So this other guy more closely came within what the people were looking for.
Remember, we're talking about the Republican primary.
Yes.
Driven by Tea Party activists.
Okay.
That guy would not win a Democratic primary anywhere in this country.
Okay. Okay. But there's a lot of talk. There is a lot of talk that the Republicans could take the Senate.
Yes.
What will that mean if that happens? From your perspective, what will that mean?
To who?
To the country. To the country.
It would be a further drifting to the right in this country. And we've seen that. And this is not the first time. That I remember 30 days after the Supreme Court decision in 1954, saying we ought to integrate our schools. Billboards went all over South Carolina. There were the billboards. Impeach Earl Warren, who was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who led the court to that decision. So we reacted negatively to Earl Warren. When Barack Obama got elected president,
right,
they didn't wait 30 days. That night they met, and they have been talking for weeks now about impeaching Barack Obama. I went up to New Hampshire campaigning a month or so ago, and there are two candidates running, Republican candidates, running for the two congressional seats they have in New Hampshire,
mm-hmm,
and they're running on the platform to impeach Barack Obama. So when I...
Isn't that kind of an old issue?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's
an old issue unless they get elected.
Okay. Well, okay. But still, I don't... But I mean, they have talked about this for a long time.
Well, sure.
Sure. I mean,
and they're campaigning on it. So if they lose, then it's moot.
Right.
But if they win, then the resolutions will get proposed. I've told people that, and they look at me like I'm crazy, but I'm telling you, that's a real issue.
Now, but what
about... And there's a reason for that.
Okay.
And once again, here's your soundbite.
Okay.
For tomorrow.
Up. Okay.
Those people who have lived for 200 years, the notion that no African American should be running this country, those people have bought into the notion, as I said in the article, to exceed expectation.
Right.
That no African-American is capable. So the only way to prove that is to work full-time making sure that you hinder the effort. And that now, just go back and read the history.
Okay. All right. But I just wanted to say, I really wanted to say, that I think when Barack Obama was elected, a lot of people had the hope that he would be the president to be able to lead the country as the first African-American president.
And with a little help from a recalcitrant Senate who met the night that he was sworn in.
Hold on. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Go ahead.
And they swore to each other that they would do everything they possibly could to impede this president. Now, that's not made up. They met at the Caucus Room restaurant, six blocks from the Capitol, and they swore to each other that they would go to the Senate and to the House, and they would work full time to impede everything this president brought to the table. And Mitch McConnell made it in the public statement, says, my first priority is to make sure that this is a one-term president. And all the way you do that is to go out and besmirch his character and do all this disrespect of him, and you get a former governor from New Hampshire, by the way, Sununu,
right,
who gets on TV, and I'm looking at him saying, this is a lazy president. I remember they said that about my daddy and everybody else that looked like him, you know, who worked like hell every day,
yeah,
to educate his children.
Well, that is one side of it, but...
But that was a governor of New Hampshire saying that.
Yes, I know.
Who had been chief of staff of a president. And there was, I mean, what do you mean by calling the president of the United States lazy?
Well, he's the most powerful man in the world, actually.
Well, and he's also of a skin color that you've always put that label on. Nobody's ever called any other president lazy, no matter how sleepy and drunk he may have been.
I think we had some others that through history we know were not the best of presidents.
Nobody called him lazy.
Afterwards?
Nobody called him lazy. I don't care what they call him. That's a word they didn't use.
Okay. All right. Well, what do you think will be the outcome of the elections? Do you think we're going to see any bipartisanship working together? I mean, I'm just asking because in the next 2 years.
Oh, sure, it could be. It could be. It all depends on.
Doesn't the Senate really hold the key, though, to things getting done? I know every time I talk to people that are in the House, they all say, we've passed X amount of bills, we've done this, it goes to the Senate. Harry Reid doesn't bring it up. What is the answer to getting things, legislation through, moving, bipartisanship?
Well, if my memory serves.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. The Senate passed a bipartisan immigration bill.
Okay.
The vote was 70-something to something.
Okay.
Sent it to the House. It is still sitting in the committee.
Well, that's because one bill coming that House, way.
Oh, well, there are others. I'm just talking about immigration being one of the biggest issues going. And a bipartisan bill passed the Senate.
What do you think about?
So all I'm saying, so it ain't just about talking about Harry Reid this and Harry Reid that. He passed that, and we say that's one of the biggest, if not the biggest issue going in this country today. They passed it.
What do you think about immigration? What should we do with immigration?
I think we ought to pass the Senate bill.
The Senate bill. What does the Senate bill do? I don't remember exactly. Go
ahead. Well, I remember everything that it does, but it's a bipartisan bill. But I think it gets us off a dead center.
Does it give us amnesty for all?
No.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what it does.
No. What it does, several things it will do that's not being done. It fixes these quotas that we get for farmers. It fixes the visas. I'm saying quotas.
Okay.
The visas system, which is the big thing. It lays out a pathway to citizenship for people. No amnesty. What you have to do in order to get citizenship. So it does it all.
Okay.
And anytime you get, you don't have but 56, I think, Democrats and independents together, and you get 70-something people to vote for it. That means you got over 20 Republicans voting for it.
Sure.
And they send it to the House, and the Speaker of the House won't bring it to the floor, and everybody's saying, we could do something if Harry Reid would just pass our bills. We could do something if the Speaker would pass the Senate bills. That's not the only bill the Senate has sent over there.
Okay, so I ask you again, are we going to get any movement in the next 2 years?
It all depends on what happens on November the 4th.
Okay. What do you feel needs to happen on November the 4th?
You need to return Jim Clyburn to the majority whip job.
I got and the Congress, I don't think that's going to happen, is it?
Well, I don't know. The odds are against us, but you know what? I remember George Wallace standing in the schoolhouse door with his little button on saying never. And look at how many guys are out there on the football field for the University of Alabama the other night. George Wallace said never. And look like they're saying forever.
Forever. Congressman Clyburn, I always enjoy sitting down. Thanks so much for coming here to Greenwood and being on our show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.